Lady Rosemary Firth was for a long time a lecturer in health education in London and has also done anthropological fieldwork in Malaya. Rosemary, you did an MA in economics in Edinburgh in 1935. If I asked you the question how you came to anthropology, presumably the answer would be that you married Raymond, or was that wrong?
Yes, it is not wrong, it is correct. But I suppose I was fidgeting about in my own mind for something of that kind. I wanted to go to Oxford originally, as a young woman, to read PEPs, and I wasn't successful in getting a place in Oxford, for which I'm very grateful. I went to Edinburgh, which was a much better education for me as a woman, as a person, as well as intellectually. And I read a very curious mixed, a degree which was called Political Economy in those days, which had a good deal of sociology and anthropology of law and things in it. And after that, I meant to go into social work, into house property management, but fortunately or unfortunately, from the point of view we look at it, I met Raymond. And when it was decided we should be married, he said to me, "Oh no, he conveyed the message, no, you are not going to go into that job. You've got to come and work with me." And also, I found that I more or less had to do that to save my soul, because after I was engaged, I remember very vividly a lunch party in Great Ormond Street, and he said, "You must meet my colleagues." And I met Audrey Richards and Lucy Mayer, and I've written about this somewhere. And their conversation to little me, just 23 or whatever it was, straight out of the university, was so bizarre. I mean, they talked, if we laughed, they talked about joking relationships, they talked about cross-cousin this, and all these technical terms which we know about. And I thought to myself, well, my goodness, if that's how my new kin are going to behave, I better learn the ropes. I mean, you can't be in this group without joining it. And of course, certainly, and I would say this for any other women or wives who are linked with anthropology, that if you do go to the field with your husband, it's very difficult not to get involved with the field. And it may not be generally known that I have no doctorate in anthropology. When I met Raymond, I went to Bronio Malinowski's seminars, and I read extensively. It was much easier to read everything one should read in those days, because less was written. And I learnt, apprenticeship-wise, I learnt with Raymond in the field. I mean, I can talk more about that later, perhaps, if you like, because I think that is one of the things that I
talk
have...
Talk about it now.
Yes. We originally meant to go to China, and then we couldn't go there because of the war going on in China, so we went to Malaya. We originally meant to go to Trengganu, but as often happens at that time with anthropologists, the exact location of where one goes doesn't often develop until one gets into the field. And we landed in this wholly delightful area of Kelantan. And we have often agreed that these poor chaps who go to desert areas or horrible places in Africa where their food is all stodged, here we were with a beautiful house on the beach where the breezes blew in, beautiful little boats sailed out with coloured sails, the food was delectable, and it was a sort of paradise. In fact, it was a kind of paradise which the war broke in on, because we heard about the beginning of the declaration of war on that beach of Kelantan. And at one time, had a fantasy, let us stay here. Of course, one can't do that. But as in that fantastic situation, I wrote very extensive letters home, letters to my father, in which I said, how nice it would seem to be able to stay here in this lovely place instead of being involved in the war back in Europe. But of course, you can't stay there unless you do work. And I was very frightened and very ignorant about field methodology. And Raymond just pushed me out, more or less. I mean, we'd learnt a bit of language at home. "Just you go and sit on the beach," he said. So I went and sat on the beach, shivering and all that inside, feeling like some curious object, and people walked up and down and stared at me, and perhaps somebody sat down and asked me funny questions, only part of which I could understand. And I think this experience of forcing yourself out into an alien group and subjecting yourself to observation, criticism, making awful social blunders and stumbling along like a ill-educated child who can't speak properly, who can't ask for what you want, you can't reply properly. To me, that is one of the things which I've been most impressive with as to what anthropological fieldwork does to the fieldworker. And I think it is that experience, of which I've written elsewhere, which has some analogies with the experience of some kind of psychotherapy, psychoanalysis, not necessarily Freudian, that you are thrown out a little, what was it, Lear said, two little forked-legged creature, and you've got to make yourself into another person. One tries to make oneself temporarily into a Malay woman. But there's a snag to it, because to make oneself into a Malay woman is not what you're paid to go out there and do. You have also to be two people. You have to be the scientist watching and looking at what's going on. And when I had got used to them and got very fond of them and made friends and also was doing my work, I was also probably much more than Raymond. I was much more torn between being myself that I knew back home and this new role that I had as an anthropologist. And when we left Malaysia after a year, I had a dream which was a nightmare, which I've written, in which I had actually become a Malaysian Muslim woman. I was squatting down on the floor, blowing up the fire, and I woke in terror. This was a nightmare dream. Before the nightmare dream, I remember there was one occasion when Pache Mark, this friend, I think, that Raymond talked about, very old, very good informant he was to, came to our house to talk about whatever it was with Raymond. And I was serving him coffee, and we were serving coffee. And when I'd served the coffee, I had an enormous urge to make this kind of obeisance and withdraw and leave the men, because women don't stay with men. And I said, I had to stamp that little foot to myself, so to speak, and said, "No, Rosemary, you mustn't do this. This is not what you're here for." And I think this being torn between two people, being the scientist and the European, and being the anthropologist, is to me, getting through that is to me what is becoming an anthropologist. And in my old-fashioned and perhaps rather uptight way, when I look at other people who come into it from sociology, what is the difference? You know, Malinowski in his early writings talked about the sociological point of view. I would say I have a feeling that going out into the field is what makes an anthropologist, not only, but of course also having intellectual luggage.
The tearing apart of it and the two people, I think it was exaggerated or emphasized enormously in your case, as you must be aware, by the fact that you were a woman, because the difference of the status of a white woman in the West and a Malaysian woman, as you were describing it, was very different. I wondered whether it's often said that one of the advantages of women working in, particularly in Muslim and other societies like this, is that there are two worlds, the world of men and the world of women. Did you feel that this was so in your case?
No, I didn't feel that at all. And I'm surprised. I suppose every woman with any mark, a shred of feminism, wanting to burst out. But don't think I've ever been wanting to be in that camp. I don't know, for whatever reason, it seems to me ridiculous that women should be fighting for being like men, I mean, for goodness sake. God asked me what I wanted to be, I could certainly say a woman.
Yes.
I mean, all right, I've got a mind, but that's different.
Yeah. There weren't certain things. What I was saying really is, were there? It's often said that the justification of a married couples, for example, going out to do field work is that there are different things that they can study. And you did write your book on Malay housekeeping, which is something.
Yeah, now that's a different point. That is a very important point. But I do think that if a woman goes into the field as an anthropologist, either alone or, and certainly of course with her spouse, that she should, that it's sensible from every point of view to exploit the fact of being a woman. Because it's always, it's a slight perplexing problem to me. Women can, I think, and Phyllis Cabra did it, of course, and I did it up to a point, but women appear to be able to be accepted as men in the anthropological field situation, not perhaps always. They can go into situations where women don't go, as far as I can see, something less threatening about it, whereas men are more excluded from going to situations where women are. And I've often thought that it hasn't really been worked out why that is. I think I was talking to Maurice Bloch about this some time, of course, and he immediately put it in a power perspective. You see, he said, "Well, this is because women are always, as you say, de-statist to men, and that is why they're not so threatening." But I'm not so sure that it is that. I think quite crudely, it may even be something biological, that women can't damage men as men can damage women physically. I mean,
I think there's, I'm sure there's a good element of that. What, in fact, did you work on once you'd got off the beach and started?
Well, the domestic arrangements and economy in Malaysia, because that was what was obvious, that I seemed obvious for me to do. And when I was doing it, I consciously modelled myself upon what Audrey Richard had done. I mean, she had done this work on food and so on. And I also, I don't know whether she knows this, I was very consciously aware that Audrey Richards wrote, I thought, beautifully, and not over elaborate technical language. This is partly perhaps the development of anthropology since then. But that is whom I tried to emulate, I think. And I went into, something I've forgotten now, the figures, 20 houses or whatever it was, you know, every day, to sit down to ask them how they spent their money, what they spent it on, how they'd cooked and so forth. And of course out of that came a number of other things, marketing and income and so forth. Looking back on it from today, I mean, I'm appalled at what I did not do. I mean, I was asked recently at LSE whether I'd come and talk to somebody about child rearing, and I didn't see that as a problem, as I should have done if I could go back now, I think. But it's another thing, by the way, apart from, I think, when a man and woman going through the, which is useful perhaps for younger people to think, to consider. Not only, I think it's a terrible waste if women go to field and don't study women's problems there, because they will supplement the other. But also, and this is a thing which Raymond and I think deliberately concocted to do, in a, some kind of situation, tricky situation, we would deliberately pretend, if you like, to take opposite sides. I remember in one case, when there's some question of some magic or other, which the Muslim fishermen were going to perform on the boats, I've forgotten now which side I took, I don't remember, I think maybe I pretended that, don't believe it's all, you know it's all nonsense, don't you know that, and Raymond saying that it was real, and seeing, therefore, testing the ground out, how the local people reacted to it. And there were other occasions where Raymond would know what fish was sold on the beach and what income somebody or other was having. And I would come back and report that, oh, Maison told me he didn't earn anything today, and so he didn't bring me any money. And Raymond said, oh, but I've got it down here, this is the fish he sold, and so forth. So then we'd go back and say, hi, you didn't tell me about that. Or, you know, what is it? And so they would find out that we could find out I think this is, of course, it's not to be done exploitatively, but it's a useful testing out of, early testing out of whether you're getting the whole story, I think.
Raymond talked about the final evidence that we are all very similar human beings, the depth of the friendship that you can form in the field with one or two people, and that all racial, cultural and other barriers disappear. Did you at any time, it may have been more difficult for a woman, did you ever feel very close to any?
No, I don't keep on saying it was more difficult for a woman. I never had that feeling at all. Mind you, these Muslim fishermen's wives were really quite emancipated. They didn't go about with veils on. I never had any feeling about being disadvantaged as a woman, ever, either in Europe or over there. But now you said something else about...
Did you ever get very close to any?
Oh yes. In fact, this is another thing that I've never said anywhere else. I felt very much sexually attracted to somebody there. And yes, I did. And we used to, dream up little fantasies about it. That was a thing I was aware of, because it's not on. And I did get very, very attached to women too. And of course, as Raymond said, a good, and in my view, a good, that is to say, a virtuous anthropologist, when he comes back from the field, he keeps in touch with his people because they're poor, and they continue to write to us for, he did so for money and so forth. And yes, I got fond of people. The other thing you said was something about whether one felt...
that they were all...
Yes. I don't know if I can put this over, because it's not very simple. When I've been teaching Europeans over school teachers over here, and I've never taught on anthropology courses, so I've never been teaching anthropology, I've only been teaching from the perspective of anthropology. Laymen will say, well, of course, we're all the same underneath, we're all human. And I, to begin with in teaching, I've always tried to deny that, because I think it can be an illusion. Of course we're all human, but we grow up to a different kind of humanity. And I think it can be quite easy to confuse the fact that because we're all human, we're all the same under the skin, and we're not, you see. We're not the same under the skin because of the way we're brought up. And there are anthropologists who have gone into the field who have found this out very sharply, that to them unmentionable cruelties have been done. I remember somebody in that book, Crossing Cultural Boundaries, with which I contributed, said he simply couldn't bear the way the people treated animals. And of course, if you read about certain Indian cultures, you think, well, how could people be human and consent to these kind of tortures? But the message that I would try to get over to the lay public is that we're human in different ways, and perhaps one of the lessons from an anthropologist will try to teach is that we also commit cruelties or atrocities, but we don't see them as such. And hopefully, perhaps, we don't think they're on the same level. But I think it's much more complicated than learning that we're all the same underneath that, because I think that's only a half-truth. There's always another side to the coin, which I think one learns in the field.
That's a much better formulation than mine. What, you mentioned Audrey Richards, and modelling her clarity and unpretentious style, and also what she was interested in. Have there been any other either anthropologists or more general thinkers who you think have influenced your work?
Lucy May, I suppose, in a way, because she was concerned with the practicalities of anthropology. Bronier, of course. I mean, Bronier Malinowski. I mean, I'm still one of those curious creature so aged that I went to his seminars. I was allowed to do it. I was a rather special person. He never turned round and asked me embarrassing questions, thank goodness, but I did go. And I think Brunier's influenced me very greatly, very greatly. Perhaps because of his early attempts, which since perhaps somewhat have been criticised by some anthropologists in what's called what we've called today the Golden Circle as being too keen on popularising. Insofar as he wanted to popularise in those days, I've been influenced by him. And I remember when I went to, first of all, to teach at the training college, Lucy asked Mayer how I could use my anthropology, and she said, "Well, if you could persuade them that when people do things differently than we do, they're neither wicked nor stupid, you would do some good." And I think that is what I learned.
Raymond has written a great deal on Eleanor Skibbitt, and as you've written as much. What sort of person did you find him as a, I won't say as a woman?
As a woman, he was, to me as a woman, he was very attractive. Mm. A very handsome man, danced very well, very gallant in a sort of Polish way, wasn't he? Could be very, very beastly to people, but I certainly had a certain respect. As Raymond's wife, you're not beastly to Raymond's wife. I think I was kind of protected in that way, because I have seen him being absolutely horrible to people, including to women.